Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Marcellaro. And this week, my guest is the founder and CEO of Stacy Hunke, Inc. Stacy Hunke, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. It's always a pleasure to do these.
I'm really happy that you've had time to be on the show. I've been reading about you, and you're a very experienced speaker and writer. You are the founder of Stacy Hunke, Inc., founded in 2004. You specialize in training business leaders in leadership, body language habits, and how to choose words. Your clients include those in finance, healthcare, and government, and the military. And you are the author of the book, Influence Redefined, Be the Leader You Were Meant to Be, Monday to Monday. And you're also the co-author of Yes, You Can, Everything You Need, A to Z to Influence Others and to Take Action. You know, the reason I wanted to have you on the show is because we're in this day and age all about the age of influence, either changing people's perceptions or instigating them into action. And as a writer, I thought that would be a really great thing to do, is to explore those issues with you. But I want to do that in the second half of the show. As usual, in the first half, I wanted to ask you about your career, because I'm always curious about how people like you arrive how you've arrived. Mm-hmm. Tell me about growing up in your early education and what was on your mind in college.
Yeah, well, people are surprised when I share with them that I actually grew up on a farm. And a lot of, I really think my discipline, my work ethics, any one of our listeners that know anyone that grew up on a farm, or maybe they have, you know, that's not exactly an easy day at work by any means. And a lot of just my hard ethic. And I bring that up because not only running a business does it take discipline, you know this, it takes a lot of discipline, a lot of hard work, a lot of motivation. But to me, that's part of having influence as well. I started my career off in radio. I wanted to be the next Katie Couric, but that did not work. And I did a lot of voiceover work, moved into then the retail industry where it really started to get off the ground. I worked for Target for a number of years. But I had an amazing coach slash boss who really saw the potential in me to train people, to coach individuals.
What did you do at Target?
I did a lot of training for their frontline staff all the way up to their CEO or slash their store managers. And it was around everything from, in their world, they called it guest service. But so much of the core to everything I did, whether it was team building, leadership, a very broad topic, it always came down to communication. From there, where it really started to escalate my career, I worked in the association world. I hired speakers. Not only did I hire speakers at our events, I also was the MC. I'd sit in the back of the room. I watched them motivate the audience. Mm-hmm. Some of them did an amazing job. The ones that really connected with the audience, not only did they motivate, but they always had practical and immediate how-tos based on the recommendations. Then I started to realize that that's what I wanted to do. Eventually, I'm going to figure that out. Long story short, moved to Chicago 18 years ago, which is where I reside today. And I took on a couple of different large corporation roles. It was always around this idea of communication, heavily focused in presentation skills. What I realized was, it's not about teaching an individual how to stand up in front of a group and present. That's a lot of my background. It, to me, really is presenting every day. And that's where 16 years ago, I started Stacy Hunke, Inc. and really focused on how can I help people become more aware of how others perceive them, no matter what type of conversation, whether it's a presentation, a hallway conversation, a phone conversation, a podcast like we are doing today. And that's where the company started 16 years ago today.
Where do those perceptions come from? Do they come from the appearance of the person, how they're dressed, their mannerisms, their speech cadence, their articulation?
I think a lot of it comes to, yes, a lot of it comes to inconsistency. Influence Redefined, book number two, redefines influence. It talks a lot about how people will start to guess at who you are. They'll start to guess whether or not they trust you, they believe in you, when your body language and your messaging are not consistent. Perceptions are created off of how people experience you, but it's both verbal and nonverbal communication.
How does your body language get out of sync with your message?
I'll give you an example, since I only have my voice right now and individuals can't see me. If when you introduced me, I would have said to you, I'm really excited to be here. I can barely stand it. And my tone doesn't match anything what I'm saying. When we're in person, it's when our eyes are moving everywhere and not connecting. It's when our gestures are repetitive or they lack purpose. Our overall posture communicates we're not confident or we're overconfident, whatever the case may be. Another big one is the lack of brevity. We love to fill. We love to add words that are out of context that cause us to speak in paragraphs rather than sentences. All of those, John, are examples of you start to get your listeners, you invite them to start questioning your level of credibility, knowledge, and trust.
Are you building up a process whereby the listener and the audience is filling in needed blanks, where you kind of lead them along and you kind of activate the verbal process in their own heads? I'm just curious.
I think you can do it. Yes. I think, John, you can do it very effectively. And a lot of that is not only with your body language, but your messaging, those two together, really creating a story around the key concept, the statistics, the research, whatever you're trying to convey. It backfires when there's that inconsistency behind body language and messaging, where at that point, individuals disengage. You know they disengage when three things happen. They either completely shut down, they say nothing.
They're looking at their cell phone or on Facebook.
Right, exactly. You got it, John. They go to their technical gadget or they start interrupting you.
I want to talk about interruptions in a minute. Yeah.
Yes, I know I talked about that. I researched that in the book. So many times individuals will say to me, well, as part of our culture, everyone has their technical gadget. I really disagree with that. I think if you truly are engaging, you're interesting, you have impact, why would someone want to stay in their phone? You want to stand out from that noise and get those listeners to the point where they don't want to do anything but listen and engage.
I've seen speakers like that. You're in rapture. You enjoy their appearance. You enjoy their cadence. You enjoy the technical topic, the way they're wrapping a story around their talk, and you're just enthralled. And the whole world kind of sinks away, and you're just completely focused on that person.
Exactly.
Once upon a time, a good speaker told me to look at a person, pick somebody in the audience, maybe somebody you're familiar with, and focus on that person and speak to that person in a sense that you focus on that person's presence, even as you look around to the other members of the audience to, you know, make it look like you're addressing everybody in the audience and not drilling in on one person. But if you can imagine yourself talking to one person, the crowd kind of sinks away and you can become more casual and more conversational. Is that a good technique?
Agree. Yes. I talk a little bit about that in the book. I call it eye connection.
Yeah.
The best tip I can give our listeners is to be thinking, only speak when you see eyes. Anytime you're not connecting with a pair of eyes, that's a great opportunity to pause, think on your feet, and adapt your message to your listeners.
That's the point where you slam your fist on the podium and say, I have a joke for you.
Yeah. Exactly.
Or wake them up.
For yeah. some, I don't know.
Tell me about this fellow at Target who inspired you. I wanted to backtrack a little bit. What was the most important thing that he taught you?
Wow. Most important thing.
Often my guests have one person in their lives who made a big influence on them and propelled their career.
He was really the person that brought to my attention that I had the capability to train others to coach.
He believed in you.
Yeah, he really did. And I look at, I was so young. I was early 20s. I was clueless. I had no idea. And he had this ability to push me to places that were so uncomfortable. And I remember how much I didn't like him when that would happen. Yet, how many years later, we reconnected in person, maybe 3-4 years ago. And I'm so glad we did, because I sat down with him and I shared with him. And most importantly, I said to him, like, I don't think I'd be where I'm at if you didn't see the potential in me in my early 20s. I think we all need people like that, no matter how old, how young we are.
That's a big factor. It's a common theme with the guests I've had on the show, is that once a thesis advisor, somebody in the business place who believed in them and supported them, even though that person had doubts at the time, if somebody else supports you and believes in you, it can make all the difference.
And I think that definitely needs to continue when we're talking about influence. The immediate skills and how-tos that are laid out throughout the book, they will take a lot of discipline. It will take a lot of hard work. Therefore, I talk about accountability and having accountability partners in your personal life and your professional life, because you're going to fall down on your face. It's going to get tough. It's going to get discouraging. Those are the individuals, though, that are the ones that are pushing you when you need the extra push, or especially when you don't want it.
Have you had male clients respond in a poor way to your lectures? And do you have to sometimes kind of use tactics and tricks that you've learned in the male-dominated society where they've been dragged into this meeting and they say, you got to go to this thing and see Ms. Henke talk, and the person sitting there with their arms crossed and they're, you know, scowling at you?
I get it from men and women and from all different cultures, all different age groups. When I see that happen, and unfortunately, I can really say it's rare that I see it at this point. What I will propose to them is, I don't have all the right answers. There's more knowledge in this room than I ever can give. I am so open to your experiences, your knowledge. All I ask is you stay open, see what you can grab. And if you still don't get anything by the first break, you are always more welcome, more than welcome to leave.
Interesting.
And I think when you can come down on a level that you're not there to lecture to them, I really approach it as, we can learn from each other. I am here just to guide you. I'm here to have a conversation with you. That to me is a powerful technique that's worked for me and my team to get those individuals to bring down the wall so that we can start to connect and engage with them. I think, John, that's true for any conversation. When the wall is built and you are not able to get through it, if you can't connect and engage, that's another time when influence will not occur.
You know, being an effective speaker means a certain level of confidence and articulation. Do you delve into techniques for those technical leaders who are sometimes on the shy side and have a hard time in front of audiences?
I do. One of them is the simple, your body language is your posture. Do you walk into the room like you own it? And then once you've earned a seat at that table, do you continue to keep that seat? Voice is another confidence skill, to really sound like you know what you're talking about. You're confident in your message, whether inside you feel that way or not. The other piece I think that really portrays the confidence, our ability to have brevity, clarity, and to be concise.
I remember one time at White Sands Missile Range, I was giving a presentation and I was in the audience watching the other speakers. And these guys are all nerds with slide rules and glasses and pocket protectors. And they hid behind the podium. The podium was at the curtain on the side of the stage, and they all went back up there and you couldn't see their body, and they huddled behind the podium and they droned through their slides. And I thought, this is terrible. So when my turn to speak came up, I said, I'm going to fix this. And I walked right out to the brim of the stage, which was like 10 meters out in front of the podium. And I stood on the very lip of the stage and I started getting animated and I started weaving a story and talking to the audience. And that went very well.
Well, and that's an engagement piece, not only from the positioning of where you placed your body on the stage, is storytelling. That is a huge request that we receive from our clients. And they don't mean, you know, help us tell a story like See Jack Run. It's help us put a story around the message, because stories are memorable. Mm-hmm. Stories are what are going to drive down the stats, the research, the charts, whatever our listeners today might need to be trying to get people to act upon.
Yep, I agree. Well, I've got a lot more to ask you in segment two, but first we have to take a commercial break, Stacey. We'll be back in 60 seconds. Folks, stay with us after this message. We'll be back with Stacey Henke, the CEO of Stacey Henke, Inc.
Hello there, all you fabulous background mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage where we have a section called Support TMO, or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
Thanks, Kelly. We're back. I'm chatting with Stacey Honke. Now, in the second segment, I want to get down nitty-gritty. We've talked about some theoretical stuff and some leadership principles, but based on the atmosphere today, which is fairly interesting, I want to get into some real nitty-gritty. Tell me how character folds into leadership. Trust, inspiration, fairness seems to be a topic on our minds these days.
Well, when you think about a leader, the definition of a leader, one of the first things that comes to mind is someone that people follow. And the only way someone's going to follow you is the perception, the reputation that you create. But that reputation has to be consistent. And reputation is usually described in the words you just identified: trust, credible, confident. I think the biggest challenge leaders have is being consistent with it.
Yeah, we see that in politics, where the trend of the moment, whatever gets the most interest, the most support from the people you needed at the time, whether it's a financial donor or a political group, seems to sway you. But how do you filter through that and have a sense of consistency and character amidst that kind of pressure?
Mm-hmm. I think you need to get feedback, but I'm not talking about false feedback, fake feedback, where when you ask, you know, am I consistent, am I not consistent, or how did I do? Frequently we hear good, nice job, great work. I'm talking asking for constructive feedback from someone in your personal life, your professional life, that you know are going to tell you the truth. And really ask them, maybe it's before a media interview, maybe it's before a board meeting, ask them to watch for certain behaviors. Let them know what you've been working on to make sure you do come across as a consistent leader. That way you're preparing for the feedback, John, and they at least know how to give you that specific feedback that you can use. After the conversation, interaction, whatever the situation may be, take 5 minutes to get that feedback from that person. That's number one.
You have
number
to trust
two,
people to speak truth to power.
That's a very good point. We want to help them be able to speak truth to power, and you can do that by asking for that prepared feedback.
Yeah.
You know, ask for the feedback before the situation, the interaction actually occurs. Number two, I think especially in a leadership role, which I really believe we all are, no matter what our job title is, we need to be experiencing ourselves through the eyes and ears of our listeners. I constantly talk about the power of either audio recording ourselves during conversations, video recording ourselves. That way, when you listen back, you can really put correlation and perspective to how did I feel during that interaction when I was being recorded, rather than how do I actually come across? Because how you actually comes across determines, am I a consistent leader during any turbulent times? Is my reputation being created the one that I am proud of Monday to Monday?
Reputation is the handling of your power. I read once that the theory of power is that power is granted to leaders for the benefit of those served, not for the benefit of those who have the power. And yet so often today we see people who are granted power using that power for their own benefit, and that doesn't create the sense of leadership or trust that we'd like. Do you agree?
I totally agree. I love that. I love that comment. And these are all comments that you and I, this conversation that you and I are having, if you really dissect it, we're not saying something that your followers on this podcast already don't know. I find, though, that when it comes to leadership, what is common sense is never common practice. What is common sense is usually the hardest thing to do, and it's the least thought that we give.
Yeah, sometimes people try to come across as folksy and down home in order to create that connection to people. But sometimes it doesn't work either. It makes it seem pandering and less than, I don't know, highly accomplished and skilled as a person. Maybe that works, maybe it doesn't. What do you think?
It's got to be. That's why I think if it's consistent, it comes across as authentic. It comes across as trustworthy. I really believe, John, that when you're consistent, you start to eliminate all doubt in everyone's mind. The minute your personal brand starts to be lacking consistency, I think that's where people start second guessing who you really are.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw another quote the other day that I really liked. I wanted to run by you. I won't mention who said this, but it was a notable government leader. And I love this quote. He said, "A good leader takes a little more than his share of the blame and a little less than his share of the credit." What's the psychology there?
I don't know where I saw it or where I read it, but it was about the leadership in military. And there was a comment about how leaders in the military will always be last to go to lunch. They'll always be last to do everything. They always let those that they lead be up in front of them. And when you said that, the part of me thinks that a leader also is very humble. I think that's part of being consistent. I think being humble is also saying that you're very confident in yourself. You're confident not only in yourself, but who you are, what you stand for. All of that just naturally comes through, not just our words. It also comes through that body language.
Yeah. Yeah. Confident in yourself. I'm a student of warfare in the Pacific during World War II, and I've read a lot of stories about submarine warfare and aircraft carrier warfare during World War II. And you have to be a certain level of accomplishment and self-confident, quiet sense of power so that people trust you because they're placing their lives in your decisions. Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem to be popular these days. Watching TV and looking at Twitter, there's a certain amount of bravado that seems to substitute for that quiet sense of power. Do you discuss that with your clients a lot?
Yeah,
how do they react to the idea of being less than, big, outstanding, powerful leader and important? And then when you tell them, no, you need to be quiet and knowledgeable and influence and
gosh, I think patient. About this, John. I think about the leaders that we've been mentoring. None of them have really ever come across that way. It's more we're asked to mentor them because they want to really enhance that overall presence, how they come across, or they want to enhance how they communicate, how they strategize through very difficult conversations. I haven't had, I guess I'm fortunate. I think that says a lot, though, to the people that come to us. Mm-hmm. If individuals, especially a leader, is going to take the time and invest in working and partnering with us, they already have just this sense of humility because they know they need work. I don't know if that's why we don't, you've got me really thinking here. I don't know if that's why I really have not experienced in quite some time individuals that I had to have the conversation around bringing the power down. I guess I'm very fortunate that way.
The ability to question your own insights and to question your knowledge indicates that you're being thoughtful and seasoned as opposed to being brash and reckless. Again, in submarine warfare, there was a fine line. In the early days of World War II, submarine commanders were brought up along the line in the peaceful days of the 30s, and they weren't very aggressive, and they failed miserably. And it was only the new young guys who came along during World War II who decided that, in order to get the job done, they had to take risks and had to be bold. But they also had to have experience and confidence. And there was this process where they trained, a second officer trained under the first officer and watched him and learned. And so that's an important process of not appearing to be so mindless and brash that nobody has any confidence in your decision making. What do you think?
Exactly. Yeah. Because I think that's where you start to shut people down too. People want to know that you're human. People want to know that they can have a conversation with you. And that conversation can be whether it's a high stakes, whether it's a conflict situation, or it's a phone conversation, it's in the hallways. It all ties back to that consistency. It ties back to that idea of being humble. Mm-hmm. When there's not a wall that people feel like, gosh, you're a leader and I report to you and I'm just uncomfortable to come to you with things. To me, that's the wrong type of leadership because it'll be tough to have influence through that.
Humble doesn't mean passive, though. You wrote an article recently about how to respond to interruptions. Tell me about that.
Well, I want to take one step back just for our listeners. Most people believe that if they pause, they will get interrupted. I will disagree with that, John. Here's why I believe we get interrupted. And I've seen this. I've observed people walk through this path. We speak in long sentences, which takes us too on to the point. We use words that are out of context and have no meaning. When you start putting all that together, we start to frustrate our listeners. As a result, they interrupt. Instead, if you're truly speaking in bullet point sentences, using pauses to think on your feet, to adapt your message on the fly, and you still get interrupted, that really is a gift because your listeners are telling you how they want you to adapt the message on the fly. Interruptions, we cause interruptions because we don't know how to get to the point. We don't know how to have that brevity.
Maybe not clicked into the psychology of the audience and what they need to know, as opposed to maybe your own message, which drones on sometimes.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Right.
So what are the verbal techniques that you can use when people are constantly interrupting you? Aside from the strategy of, you know, what you just described, how do you deal with interruptions in best case?
I rely on first two skills, John. I will pause. If someone interrupts me, I just stop. I will never interrupt someone back, because I don't want to communicate that interruptions are okay.
Oh, cool.
Stop. Right. Stop talking. Then look them directly in the eye. If that doesn't work, just look them in directly in the eye. If that still doesn't work, I mean, I have not found that not to work. So I always think, okay, if that would never work with me, what would I do then? At that point, I would grab wherever they got that breath of air, and I would provide clarity by either paraphrasing what they just said and then redirecting where they were trying to go off to the topic at hand. Clarification is huge. Sometimes when they're interrupting, they keep interrupting, that there's something that's sitting there that either A, they don't agree with you, or they just want to be heard. That acknowledgement of clarifying what they're saying sometimes is enough for them to feel heard, for you to continue on.
Excellent. Excellent. So how do you become an influencer and excite people to action? You know, one of the things that I learned in the military was you can delegate authority, but you can't delegate responsibility. Do you come across that in the business world where leaders are not courageous enough to delegate authority and then they don't get people become stakeholders? Do you teach that?
We do. And it comes down to someone who feels like, well, I'll just do it. I'll just do it myself. I think we're all guilty of it. And it's tough. I especially see it if you've got someone who reports, gets promoted into a VP role. So they're not used to that type of delegation, or they're now in a role where they need to be managing individuals who used to be their peers. That's a huge transition. To me, that's just going to take time, because now in both of those situations, you truly have to prove that you're the right person in that role. And that proof is going to be through a lot of trust, that people trust that what you're saying is congruent to the culture, it's consistent, most importantly, that you're always upfront and honest.
In my experience in aerospace, I saw people promoted above their peers, and then all of a sudden their used to be friends are now trying to manipulate them for their own ends, because they're friends with a person who has some power now. How does the leader deal with that?
A clarification: if the leader now is in a position of power over individuals that they weren't in the past?
Yeah.
Think, just have a conversation. Sit down and have a conversation first. And I would just lay it out on the table. You know, I always think of my father always said to my sisters and I, honesty is the best policy. Just be honest. Nothing can go wrong if you're honest. Because to me, that also just, it shows that you're accountable. You're accountable as a leader to make sure that during that conversation with these individuals now that you lead, how do they want to be led? What are their concerns about now this new partnership, this new relationship? How do they want to be communicated with? What is their ideal leader? What are their expectations moving ahead in the next 6 months, the next 3 months? I think the mistake we make is we go under the assumption that communication is happening, or we go under the assumption that if we say it once, everyone hears it, everyone understands it. It's that open communication. I'm not talking emails. I'm not talking text messages. I'm talking regular face-to-face conversations. That alone, that effort that a leader can put in to have those conversations face-to-face also communicates that they care, not about their position, but they truly care about the group that they're now leading as a team.
I've seen leaders in aerospace get up out of their office and they make their rounds about 8 or 8:30 in the morning before people get really rolling and before the meetings start. They'll wander into your office and just sit down and say, John, hey, what are you doing today? What's happening? Tell me about your work. And then they'll move on after 10 minutes or so. They'll move on to the next cubicle. That's a very interesting technique.
Yes. I had someone, I was so admired him. He is a CEO of a small advertising company. And I would watch him. He would, mid-afternoon, do exactly that. Just walk around the office and chat with people. And you could feel it. That environment was so family-oriented. It was a very open communication environment versus sometimes, I was just at an organization earlier today, and it was very clear that the leader did not spend time or didn't really know what was going on his team.
I think it's because they're shy.
And might be.
They feel like they need to be above the fray, and it's difficult to sit down with somebody and learn about them and talk to them, perhaps.
Yes, that might be part of it. It might be that, or I think sometimes we just go under the assumption of how we've behaved in the past is always okay. And no matter what position we take on, as we grow, our behaviors have to grow.
Yeah.
To me, influence is a learning curve. It's a long time. It's a lifetime learning. It's something that we always need to focus on, and we don't. I've had individuals, John, define influence to me as, well, you're influential based on your title. The more that you grow in a company, the more influence you have. The more experience you have, the more influence you have. And I say to them, influence is not a badge of honor. It's not something that is just naturally given to you. You truly have to earn it, but you have to prove it every day.
Yeah, we run across that in the writing world as well as the business world, where we'll write things and we'll have an opinion. We'll talk about Tim Cook and we'll make observations and write editorials. And then it'll be interesting to see the feedback from the readers in the comments about whether they agree with you or not. And tells you a lot about whether you're being just opinionated and being a jerk, or whether you're really experienced and being influential in your writing. So for those writers out there who are trying to influence their readers, do you have any tips, ideas about writing techniques, perspectives?
John,
I'm putting you on the spot here.
Yeah, that's why I had a ghostwriter help me write my second book. I am so not good at writing. I will be the first to admit. So because I'm not good at it, I'll answer it from that perspective. I pass my writings by a lot of people in my life that I can trust. And the big joke with my team is, Stacy, when you write, it's as if you think we can hear exactly what you're thinking. And we laugh about that. But my best way of writing is to put as many personal examples into my writing. That helps me get through the misperception I have of, well, can't you hear what I'm thinking in my head? I find the more personal examples that relate to whoever I'm trying to influence in that article, that writing, that helps. The feedback for me is huge by getting a second, third, fourth pair of eyes in some cases to really take a look at my work.
Sometimes we don't have the luxury of that in the writing world. It's so fast paced that your editor and your colleagues are so frantic, so busy working on some technical challenge or fighting their Macintosh or reading an article that they just don't have time to even proofread your work. Sometimes I'll get feedback from a cranky reader who'll say, hey, isn't there anybody proofreading your work? And I'm going, I'm the proofreader.
Sorry, guys. I know, we still do it, especially being in the industry that I'm in, that being communication. I'll frequently have people call me out. And that's after, John, we've had how many editors look at our work. Yeah. It's human behavior. Yet it's a good example of my reputation is I'm supposed to be there as your coach, as your mentor, the expert in communication, that when I do mess up, it's damaging. It definitely is damaging for my reputation, the company's reputation. I think it goes back to you're always in camera. You're always on camera. You're always under the microscope. And people are watching you. And that's why how we show up every day is very important.
Well, we're about out of time, but I have one jackpot question I want to spring on you. Are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
All right. Here at the Mac Observer, we follow the happenings of Apple pretty much and what Tim Cook does. If you've had any experience watching him, how do you think Tim Cook is doing as a leader, the CEO of Apple? You don't have to answer if you don't follow him.
I feel like I don't follow him enough to give a intelligent comment rather than a very loose opinion.
Okay. All right. Well, I just sprang that on you at the last minute. So
did I just dodge that one?
Yeah, you dodged it.
I dodged it.
All right. So we're coming to the close of the show. I'll give you one more chance. Is there anything you wanted to talk about that I missed? Maybe a notable story of a corporate turnaround or somebody you really influenced or somebody you
yes.
gave a presentation to and then you saw directly the effects in the company?
I do. And only because this literally happened about 2 weeks ago, maybe. I was working with a individual.
You don't have to name names here.
What's that? Yeah, I won't drop any names or companies or anything like that. He was newly promoted to VP. Mm-hmm. And when him and I got behind closed doors and I was mentoring him, everything comes out on the table. And that's pretty safe to say, no matter who I work with, because as a VP, he really feels he's got this image to portray that he can't let down his guard. And one of the things that he had shared with me is how he loses sleep at night. And it's because of all these conversations he has to have the next day, how uncomfortable he is with them. After spending about 3 months with him, not every day, but 3 months having access to me, at our very last mentoring session, John, he said to me, he goes, one of the biggest benefits to working with you is that I no longer have to schedule my calendar the way I have in the past. When I dug deeper into that, he shared how he would schedule media interviews, anything that was in front of a video camera, because he was a big spokesperson for this company. He would schedule these real early in the morning so that no one would see him. Because he would get so nervous, John, that he would sweat through his shirts and have to change his shirts. He didn't want anyone to know that that's the place that he went to, that he would show up with two different shirts on during that day. He said to me, the best part is I no longer have to change shirts. And really what that comes down to is he now has practical skills, techniques to get through the many uncomfortable, high stress situations that he's in. And he can do it in a way that I don't want to say he gets comfortable, but he does it now in a way that he can control the distractions that were preventing him from coming across as effective as he really can.
Very cool. Well, what a great conversation this was. I think we've covered a lot of ground about leadership and influence here in 35 minutes. This has been a spectacular conversation. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, John. It's been an honor. I've enjoyed talking to you too.
So tell the listeners how they can contact you if they wish, Twitter or email or whatever you'd like.
Yes, all of the resources, and that's what we are. We are a resource pump that we send resources out daily through all social media networks. You can find me on our website. It's Stacey with an EY, HANKEINC.com.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for having the time and the patience with us. And teaching us all about leadership principles. It's been fun. I really enjoyed it.
Me too. Thank you so much.
Listeners, I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you next week. You've been listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode.